roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here. It's Junkie Radio's second show of the week, live here on Sportscaster. That's right. I'm going to reiterate it over and over. We're no longer on Wednesdays. It's now a Monday and Thursday show, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So what you're watching now, if you're watching it right now, it's live. All right, we got a lot to discuss. Of course, there's still a little bit of fallout from UFC 254, which took place this past Saturday in Abu Dhabi. That ended the five-week run for the UFC in Fight Island. Of course, you all know the results. Khabib Nurmagomedov defeated Justin Gaethje, immediately retired afterwards. That's kind of what we want to talk about when we say the fallout. That was the major story. Robert Whittaker also defeated Jared Cannonier in the co-main event. So, look, we'll discuss a little bit of that because, look, the fighters do their rounds of posting on social media or interviews, and it's always fun to talk a little bit about the drama side. They already did. They already handled their business. The X's and O's are done. Now we start building towards the future. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Bellator has a card tonight. ONE Championship has a card tomorrow night. It's tomorrow night in Singapore. It's going to be tomorrow morning here on the Pacific time zone and the Eastern time zone, 5:30, 8:30. We'll talk a little bit about that. Joseph Benavidez is also going to join us on today's show. I don't believe he's done too much media since his last fight against Davison Figueiredo. So buckle up, folks. Put on that seatbelt. MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, October 29th.
Habla español, amigo.
Hola amigos, Dani Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
All right, so we're going to go from past to future because I also failed to mention Anderson Silva fights on Saturday, folks, against Uriah Hall. So Bellator, ONE Championship, UFC, huge, huge weekend. I saw you do this, Goz, in the middle of me saying something. Did you forget something or did you just think of something?
Nah, you just pissed me off.
Me?
No, just kidding. Bellator, man, they lost two fights.
Did they?
Yeah, Nick Newell and Arteaga.
COVID?
They haven't given the official announcement, but one of the opponents kind of may have slipped something out, but we're just not sure yet. But yeah, it's looking that way.
The fighter that was going to fight Kevin Holland, Mahmood, he's also out for the UFC, and they already got a replacement, Mahmood Muradov. He's out. Muradov withdrew, and now Charlie Ontiveros is slipping in to fight Kevin Holland.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, good for Charlie Ontiveros, I guess. I don't know that we need to plug people in. On the one hand, Uriah Hall probably wants to fight. On the other hand, how serious was Muradov's injury? Can we just wait a month? Is Uriah Hall concerned about getting paid? Because if so, pay him, UFC. You know what I mean? Charlie Ontiveros, the first thing I looked at was his record, 11-6. All right, has he won 11 straight? You know, did he start off rough but turn it around? Or is there some notable names there? I guess I'll check here while we talk about it. Sometimes I just wonder if this close on a Thursday, I read about it yesterday, to be fair, but should they be replacing a fighter this late, guys?
You know, in the past, I would say no. But I think because of the times that we're in, fighters are just more equipped to be ready to go and to do those type of things. And I think the organization's kind of just going through their flow already. So I guess it's not so bad now. But yeah, had this happened a year ago, you'd be like, take it easy. You don't have to do this, whatever. But I think that's just kind of the climate we're in now.
He won three of his last four. He's got notable losses to Jeff Neal and Michael Venom Page. And I don't recognize any of the names that he's beaten. But we'll see. What if he goes out there and beats Kevin Holland and then gives me the finger? He'd have every right to, you know what I mean? But I just wonder if sometimes they're better served. They have the ability to move fighters around, you know, because they have so many cards. I want to see Kevin Holland against good competition. Mahmoud Muradov's good. He's favored, I think. So, or start off as favorite. He's no joke. But whatever. It's done. Yeah, Anderson Silva fights Uriah Hall this weekend. So, you know, lots to talk about. But I want to go into the past a little bit. Goes Khabib, he put out a statement. He said, I just don't know what else there is to prove. Because a lot of us are hoping he's emotional. When he gets back to Dagestan, he'll rethink things. He's not going to vacate. He's going to keep fighting. He still sounds like he's good.
I don't know, man. I've kind of gone back and forth a little bit on all this. And by the way, I do want to point out to the Sportscaster audience and the MMA Junkie Radio audience, I guess the same thing. I don't know if you noticed this, but it was such a big card this past weekend that I don't even know that we got to Cannonier and Whitaker. Did you know that?
What do you mean?
When we recapped, when we came back on Monday.
Oh, on Monday.
There was just so much going on with Khabib.
You may not have mentioned it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of media that goes and I do. So you forget, well, where did we talk about it? But yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, well, so we'll eventually get to all that. I mean, you got to remember, Khabib he's massive here. Can you imagine back in his home country? I mean, over there, like George and I were talking about this a little bit, like whether or not he's really an international superstar. I think he's pretty close. George, I think you think he kind of falls a little bit short. And the more I think about it, I think
he's not Leo Messi or Ronaldo or LeBron or Tom Brady.
Yeah, because those guys, no matter where they are in the world, when they walk outside, they get mobbed. And I don't know that would happen to Khabib. So, yeah, there's different levels. I think the dude's going to be back. I just think he needs to think things over a little bit and just kind of get used to life right now. Because, you know, losing a family member is difficult. But to have to kind of have to perform at the same time and have the responsibilities of being a champion, that's tough. I think he just has to figure out his place in the world right now. But I think he'll be back.
I'm going to use maybe what's a terrible example, and I don't mean it to insult Khabib. I just mean it to maybe make a point. Think about the Rocky movie when he loses Mickey, his trainer, who he considered his father. He wasn't his father, but he considered his father. I mean, heck, throughout the Rocky movies, Rocky has these introspective moments that last anywhere from a moment to months, you know, in which he's just lost. And I'm sure Sylvester Stallone did his best to study, you know, boxing figures and, you know, trying his best to make the role what it is. He wasn't Khabib. He wasn't undefeated. He was just a club fighter, a circuit fighter. And Apollo Creed chose him, but then all of a sudden he became a world champion. And so as we progress through the movies, in the third movie, he loses his trainer. He wanted nothing to do with fighting. Why? Because he was in a fog. He was mourning. He was hurt. And then at some point, he was motivated to come back, you know? And I get it. It's a movie. I get that. But still, I just think Khabib needs time. And if we're wrong, we're wrong. But when somebody asks me, what do you think? I think back to my 45-plus years of watching sports, and I think most of the time I've seen athletes that rush it like this at that young of an age and to come back. If Habib was 38 and he said this, I'd go, he's done. Done. But he's not. He's just turned 32. He was 31 less than 30 days ago. Less than a month ago, he was 31. He just turned 32. His father was lost in the last 3 months or so. We're in a pandemic. A lot of people from his village in Dagestan also suffered, and some passed away. He's gone through a lot. So I think he just needs time, but I think he'll be back. And yes, goes, he's big in, obviously, Dagestan, national hero. But all of Russia, same thing, big, big Habib fans. And then in the Muslim world, in the Middle East, Habib, definitely superstar, definitely getting mobbed at the airport. Global superstar? No. But I'll say not yet. Maybe could be, especially if he continued. But at this particular time, he's not there yet.
You know, I have a little system to it. I think there's popular, famous, and superstar. And popular is like you and I, we're popular. If we walk into places sometimes in Las Vegas, people know us, okay? But if we're just out in the middle of Norfolk, Virginia, people aren't going to mob us or anything like that. Then there's famous. And I think famous is wherever you go, you could probably find a couple people that know who you are. Or if somebody brings up your name, they may not be able to say, I know what he does for a living. Or they might not be able to say, I've met him or whatever. But they might say, yeah, isn't he a boxer? Isn't he this or isn't he that? And then there's superstar. And superstar is the person that walks out and gets mobbed. You know, people were asking pictures, photos, autographs, all that. I think those are the levels. And right now, I think Habib is famous.
Yeah, but in some places, he's a superstar. In some places, he does get home. And in other places, he doesn't. So I would almost say global superstar on top of a superstar. But who knows? I like it. It's cool. Again, I think he'll be back. Let's transition into John Jones. What has happened to this guy, man? He's still at it. It all started with this tweet right here. I found it. The other day I came up short. I think I was talking with you and Richard on the Triple G show, and I couldn't find it. And here it is. I don't know why. I always have trouble finding it, but here it is. He said, until I take that heavily crown, I grant you the spot. Enjoy, champ. I believe he said that after they started talking about Habib being pound for pound the number one guy. That's all they said, folks. They didn't say greatest of all time or anything like that. They just said pound for pound, the number one spot. The UFC rankings came out. They had Habib number one. The USA Today Sports and MMA Junkie rankings came out. We had him also as pound for pound number one. Prior to the fight, we had John Jones number one. Habib just won. John Jones hasn't fought since Dominic Reyes. I imagine if John Jones were to fight again, especially if he was a champion defending a title, he could probably overtake Habib. They're basically identical in the sense that they're both undefeated. We don't really hang that L on John, even though it's there technically. He's got way more title defenses. We get that. But at the same time, Habib's been dominant in another way where I think he can come up a little short on the title defenses because he's been so destructive. I mean, barely even losing rounds, much less fights, and just getting finishes left and right over guys that became interim champs or were former world champs. Like I say, he's been very, very, very dominant. And for some, that, along with what have you done for me lately, along with the asterisk that some pin on Jones for the times that he's, popped for PEDs. For some people, that it's either GSP or Habib or whatever. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But Jones is not taking it right. He's put out a series of tweets over and over and over. 15 world titles. The numbers don't lie. He says, let me see, I've won the 15 titles. He just wants one for the fact that this is even a conversation is mind-blowing to me. I got signed by the UFC literally 9 months after my first MMA practice, unheard of. I mean, he's at that point, he's not even talking about his world titles. He's just talking about his career resume. Bro, are you that bothered about that? Like, seriously, what's wrong with this guy?
Who does he remind you of?
That he needs to pump himself up constantly? I don't know who.
To me, he reminds me of Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather would have to do the same. That's why he did very little interviews, because he would always find himself in that position where, rather than talking about his greatness, he was defending himself and he got sick of it, right? John Jones reminds me of that exact same thing. John Jones is a great fighter, okay? But I think he's so desperate to feel accepted and to feel loved that he's got to just go out and bury people sometimes. Like, I don't understand this situation. Like, for one, I am one of those guys with the asterisk, you know, like, PEDs is a big deal. It really is. So I'm one of those guys. If you take that away, then I would probably have John Jones still being pound for pound, just because to me, title defenses are really big. But I know that had Habib kept continuing fighting, he probably would have passed John Jones, I think. And it's for what you said. The way he wins fights is destructive. We're not going, who won that fight, man? Oh, it's a close decision. Like, he's annihilating people. Good fighters, really good fighters. John Jones had a very good stretch like that as well, though. Okay. What's kind of hurt John Jones a little bit is some of those guys that we thought were invincible at the time ended up going into different weight classes and doing different things. You know, so that kind of, maybe it stings John, but it doesn't hurt him. I think John is upset that he doesn't get paid what he thinks he should get paid. So there's a lot of things that bother that kid. And I wish he could just sit back and relax a little bit. Like, you don't have to go out there and scrap with everyone every day. Like, people get it. You're great. If you think John Jones isn't a good fighter, you're an idiot. If you can maybe poke a few holes and say, I thought he lost this fight or something, that I can understand. Okay. I might even fist bump you on one or two of those. But to think he's not great is just stupid, idiotic. John, I think, believes a lot of people think he isn't great. And they're not saying that. They're not saying you're not great, champ. They're just saying, we think this guy's career might have been better than yours.
Actually, what we're saying is at this moment, he's just pound for pound the better fighter. You know, he's just, I guess, he's really the last of the two to perform. I think if John's fight was next week, and he was pretty destructive, he'd probably take him over, because it would be another title defense if he still had his title against probably a formidable opponent. John got a couple of those. Somebody got whisked to the front of the line. Yeah, he did have some Hall of Famers that he beat along the way, but also along the way, he had some fighters that either weren't a clear number one or whatever. Habib only had really Ally Aquinta, and it wasn't Al's fault. He just happened to be on the same card of a fight that fell apart. That's the one in Brooklyn where Conor McGregor came in and started throwing a dolly through a bus and fighters started falling off. Tony Ferguson was supposed to fight on that card originally. Then it became Max Holloway. Then he was out, and, you know, just a lot of stuff went on that card, but that wasn't Habib's fault. That title was vacant. He won it, and then he went on to defend it. He defended it against Conor McGregor. He defended it against Dustin Poirier, and now he defended it against Justin Gaethje. All legit, legit fighters. The only thing I could think of is, really, when he fought Conor that night, he should have fought Tony. Tony was the number one contender. It's just that at the time, I think when they made the fight, Tony had torn his knee, and nobody thought he could be ready in 5 months to fight Anthony Pettis. It just so happened he did. But in reality, that's the night he should have fought Tony, because they both technically weighed in and they both and made weight. I guess Tony would have had to lose the extra pound. But that fight was just too big, and the UFC wanted to make it, and so they shoved Conor in there. You know, and again, I'll give the UFC the pass in the sense that Tony was coming back from that injury. You know, what are they going to do? Tell Conor, hey, look, it's you. But if Tony comes back from the injury, you know, then we're going to plug him in. Doesn't work like that with Conor McGregor. So Jones, like you said, goes, we're waiting. Okay. When Bruce Buffer gets the microphone, judge, this guy scores it this way. You know, we were all wondering, who are they going to give it to? Reyes or Jones. People had scorecards that said Reyes on it. You know, it just so happened the judges gave rounds 3, 4, and 5 to Jones and 1 and 2 to Reyes. And then before that, Thiago Santos, one of the judges gave it to Thiago Santos. That was a split decision win for him. With Habib, there wasn't any of that. There was clear finishes, destruction, dominance. You know, but again, here's the other thing, goes. Let's say the fight had happened 2 weeks ago and now Jones was acting the way he was acting. I think we'd all go, it must be getting to him. The last 2 weeks, Habib's been doing the rounds of media and it's bugging Jones and Jones hasn't gotten this fight. No, this is something else. This is a Twitter meltdown that started on fight night. You know what I mean? Which speaks to his character. Put the argument aside of who's pound for pound or whatever. Put that to the side. It's why are you doing this on the night of the fights? Him and Conor McGregor have that bad habit of doing it. You know, when I think in their position, especially if they call themselves martial artists, they can just behave like a professional. I'm a prize fighter. You know what I mean? But you ever notice that when it's convenient, man, I just like to get down and claim what's mine when it has to do with like social media or backing themselves up or when they're backed into a corner and they got to defend themselves. And then there's moments where like, well, I'm just being a professional. I'm a martial artist. That's how we're supposed to behave in and out of the octagon, make my family proud, blah, blah, blah. It's so inconsistent with those two. You know what I mean? That was Habib's moment. And he said, I mean, there was a couple tweets I left out that he said that I thought were very, very cool on John's behalf, along with the others that were saying stuff. But no, that little dig had to come in. And again, it's not just the argument itself. It's what does that say about your character?
I think what it comes down to is those two guys, Conor McGregor and John Jones, just can't bear to see other people get attention. I think it's
They're haters, right?
I don't know if they're haters. I just think they're used to being the man, you know, and you see for a second somebody else getting attention, you go, wait a minute, how could they be getting attention? Do you know who I am?
And not only are they getting attention, they're also seeing another guy kind of do it the right way.
Maybe, yeah. Then the other thing that I want to go back to is initially what you were talking about when Habib was supposed to face Tony Ferguson, Tony falls out. All right. He's preparing for Tony Ferguson. That's a very unique style. They swap him with Max Holloway. All right. Max Holloway at the time was a monster. One weight class below, but still a tough kid and a big kid. All right. So if you're a fighter, that's not like a gimme. You know what I mean? That's a tough fight, but he took it. Then that fell out at the last second. And in steps in Al Iaquinta. Al Iaquinta is a good fighter. Okay. But Habib took it. Can you remember a time in John Jones' career where a fighter fell off of a card and he was offered another, and what did he do?
He didn't take it. When Dan Henderson fell off, they offered him Chael. He didn't take it. But then they wound up coaching, and he fought Chael, and Chael was working off the loss to Anderson Silva. So it's not like – I mean, really, at that point, it became a ratings bonanza for Tough. And I'm not saying John asked for Chael, but John also needs to realize there were some times during his career when he took fights – against fighters that weren't the number one contender. Now, some of it also had to do, he was just clearing the division. He was beating everyone there was. And a lot of those names that he also talked about, some of them were a little bit past their prime, and subsequently they were beat by other fighters too. And that's not to say Habib hasn't done the same, you know? Al Iaquinta's taken a loss since he fought Habib. So, yeah, we're not suggesting that. All we're saying is leave an opening for hardcore knowledgeable MMA fans and hardcore MMA media members and fellow fighters and other MMA notables that know what the fuck they're talking about. You know what I mean? We just don't see it your way, but it doesn't mean you suck. You're just number two right now. You were number one 72 hours ago or 4 days ago. You were number one. Now you're number two. And if you fight again, you're likely to be number one again. Fucking save your meltdown for like more important things is all I'm saying. You know, like learn how to compartmentalize your life and do that for something else. And no, I don't think he's trolling and he's playing us, because that's what, if a master troll can do it in one or a subsequent amount of tweets or something like that, but over a series of tweets, I mean, come on, that's a meltdown. Go tell the fans what your opinion is.
The point that I'm trying to make here on all this is I don't really blame him. Okay, the night of, Okay, when you lose Dan Henderson, you prepare for Dan Henderson, they give you someone else. If I were his coach or his manager, I would say, listen, I understand. I get it. You have something to protect. You're going to lose out on this payday. You have to know this, though. The UFC is probably going to be really pissed at you because they're dismantling an entire card for this, okay? So you need to be aware of, A, the UFC is going to be really, really mad at you, and B, when people start to talk about pound for pound and who's the greatest of all time, this is a little argument that may come back to bite you in the ass, okay? I would tell John that for sure. You need to know those things. And I think John probably did hear that. And at that point said, nah, you know what? I'm the champ. This is dangerous. This is foolish for me to risk my title. I'm just going to back out of this fight. Okay.
I think Greg Jackson was the one that convinced him more than anything. I think if Greg Jackson says, let's do it, he probably would have done it. You know, and I don't think 10 years ago he thought about he might lose an argument, you know, of who's pound for pound over that.
No, I'm just saying in the future,
mm-hmm.
If I were his manager, I would tell him this is one of those things that may come up later on in life that's going to bite you in the ass. And the example is Floyd Mayweather, right? How many times do people often when he says, I beat Manny Pacquiao, people go, bitch, that was like 5 years past his prime. Like, we wish you guys would have fought when you were both in your prime, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably something that somebody told Floyd. Look, man, you avoid him now, you fight him later, people are going to say this. And he had to make that decision, and he made it, right? I just think it's one of those situations. So at the same time, I don't think John can get mad when people nitpick these things because, yeah, he kept his title. Yeah, he fought him later and beat him. But these are just little things that you have to do when you're talking pound for pound. You have to nitpick because you're looking at great fighters, some of the greatest fighters of all time. Right? There's not going to be that much of a difference. So you really have to go in with a fine comb and you have to nitpick these little types of things. I'm not saying John Jones isn't awesome. John Jones is incredible. But this is what we have to do when you take two guys like Khabib and John Jones, you have to nitpick.
If John Jones beats Stipe Miocic next and defends it twice, he's still going to hold the asterisk against them, or does the asterisk eventually go away?
Nah, it can't go away. Well, no, because then you can start to erase some of that past. And then, you know, now he's building a new future. So, yeah, eventually it does go away. But yeah, that's just tough, man.
Yeah. Well, Anderson Silva also has an asterisk. But definitely one of the all-time greats. Of course, we know he's on a little bit of a tailspin. In his last few fights, he's 45 years old, folks, but he's going to get in there against Uriah Hall. This is the last time he'll fight in the UFC octagon. Why am I saying it like that versus this is the last time he'll ever compete? Well, that's just kind of how it's been written. So him and the UFC are parting ways. I suppose he could still fight somewhere else. I don't know if he will, and I don't know if he needs to, but let's focus on Uriah Hall. Hall's a favorite. Not by much. And let me see. I got the odds right here. Silva's plus 190. Hall was minus 230. What do you think, goes? Does Spider still have any gas left in the tank? Can he eke this one out?
He does. It wasn't that long ago that, you know, he was given the champ a run for his money. He fought him pretty well. The thing about Uriah Hall that everybody always points to, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but physically the dude can do a lot of things. Mentally, he has some hurdles, right? There's a little bit of an intimidation factor sometimes for him. It's the guy across from him, and sometimes it's just himself. And Anderson doesn't really have that. He had it a little bit after the leg break, but I do think that maybe when you add the moment, seeing a guy like Anderson Silva in front of you, that could be kind of intimidating. And if Uriah Hall can't get off right away and implement his game plan, I could see him getting into trouble. Anderson's just really hard to hit. He really is, even at this age. You know, he's so lanky in his movement and all that. And the fact that this is his last fight, I think Anderson's going to take it very, very seriously. So I actually put Anderson Silva down as my pick.
Okay. All right, well, look, here's the card right quick for anybody that's wondering. Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall is your main event. And in case you're also wondering about that one, it is five-minute rounds. We get to see 25 minutes of Anderson Silva. Bryce Mitchell will fight Andre Feely. Kevin Holland is now fighting Charlie Ontiveros. Mahmoud Muradov is out. Greg Hardy's fighting Maurice Green. Bobby Green is fighting Thiago Moises. Alexander Hernandez, so that's the great, not Fluffy. The other one is Anthony Hernandez versus Chris Grutemacher from Tough, if you'll recall. Adrian Yanez versus Victor Rodriguez. Sean Strickland's back after 2 years. He's fighting Jack Marshman, the paratrooper from Wales. Cole Williams versus Jason Witt. Dustin Jacoby, who's dabbled with kickboxing for many years and, of course, done some MMA. He's fighting Justin Ledette. Courtney Casey versus Priscilla Cachoeira and Kevin Natividad versus Miles Johns. All right, we're expecting Joseph Benavidez to pop in here in just a second. But before he does that, goes, I wanted to ask you, Bellator cut a bunch of athletes. Did you see that? What did you think of all those names? That was like a roster purge, man.
It was, but Scott Coker did a little interview, and he explained it a little bit. I mean, I think it's something that, not to be mean, but a lot of people wanted them to do earlier, right? Cut some of these guys that they pay a lot of money and focus on the youth. And it just seems like focusing on the youth right now is something that they're going to start doing it. So it had to happen. Some of these guys had to go. Not so much because they're older or because they've lost a step. It's because a lot of them have fought each other, or some of these guys have fought the guys that are the champions at the time. So it doesn't really make much sense to just keep them on the roster and give them fights that aren't going to really make much sense and pay them that big amount of money when you can pay some younger youth and get them on the roster. But some of those names we've seen in Bellator for a long time, and some of them actually helped build Bellator.
What do you think is going to happen with Roy Nelson and Frank Mir? That's two names that we know very well because we've seen them here in Vegas. We've seen Frank as the UFC champion, Roy as the IFL champion, and we've seen them both just long-time UFC competitors. They've grappled. You know, they've been coaches on Tough. They've put in their time, but I think they still want to fight. But what do you think is going to happen with those two?
BKFC. Bare knuckle. It's got it written all over it. For one, Frank, I think, already did sign to go there. And then Roy Nelson, I mean, how do you not put him in there?
Roy Nelson would be perfect. And apparently they pay pretty good money. So, yeah, I could see that. Joe Warren, I didn't even know he was still, like, active, but he was another one that got cut as well.
Well, he helped build the Bellator. Yeah, even back to the tournament days, he's just a name that has been there for a long, long time. Even that show that they did that was kind of like the Ultimate Fighter, I forget what they called it, but he was one of the coaches there, and he did a lot for Bellator. I don't know if he's crying over this because, like you said, I don't know that he's really active, like actively looking for fights or anything like that. So,
Sean Bunch, Manny Vasquez, Ricky Bandejas, AJ Agazarm, Derek Campos, let's see here. I'm trying to get the names that most people are familiar with. Haim Gonzali, David Caveman Rickles, Rafael Carvalho, a former champ, Mir and Nelson, like we mentioned, Christina Williams, Rafael Lovato Jr., Pat Curran, and John Fitch have retired. So, yeah, big changes coming up. All right, folks, it's time for our guest. He's joining us now on the hotline. Joseph Benavidez, one of the all-time greats in the lower weight class, is a WEC and UFC legend. He's going to join us. We'll be right back. Hang in there with us.
The Sneak is a true crime podcast from For the Win in USA Today, and this season is on a surfing champion whose life took a violent, tragic turn.
Within 30 seconds, they're both dead.
The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is out July 29th, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, here we go. What's going on, Beefcake? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. ¿Cómo está?
What's up, brother? Good to see you guys.
Good to see you too. I like your you got the Hulk Hogan shirt going on there. A little bit of a you gonna rip it in half?
Oh, a little scoop. Yeah, I actually did cut that myself because the collar got all weird. And I just cut it. But
go ahead, just rip it for us. Give us a Hulk Hogan thing.
Oh no, I don't want to rip it. I like it.
Oh, okay. Well, is it one of those slick ones that you get downtown? I think you had told me about some spot downtown where you get all your t-shirts.
I don't know where I got this one.
Ooh, all right. Well, I tried. I thought it would have been a moment. How you doing, man? Can we talk about your last couple weeks, or are you kind of hanging out, holding your cards close to your chest on that one?
Oh no, let's talk about it.
All right. So Joseph Benavidez is recovered, I believe now, right? Recovering or recovered from COVID? Are you negative?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. They don't call the COVID kid for nothing.
Yeah, so if y'all recall, Joseph was going to be on with us a few weeks ago, and that was about the time things began. Tried to check in with him a few times. It looked like it was a rough one at times, Joseph, but then you're good now. You're feeling great.
Yeah, I feel fine. I honestly, didn't feel terrible when I had it. I mean, I felt sick like you do, mainly a fever and a sore throat for me. That was kind of it. That was really it. And then couldn't train for a week. And then I'm still just kind of, kicking back on that for the week, just so I'm like 2 weeks solid, no symptoms before I go back and, got a lot of people fighting and stuff. So, yeah.
I know your wife just came back from her job working with the UFC. Have you guys been able to even – were you negative before you could pick her up, I guess?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, luckily, by the time I got her, I was about a week, no symptoms. And, I actually didn't take another test. The second one, they just said, like, once you have no symptoms, you're kind of good to go. That was my protocol, at least.
Yeah.
So I picked her up and she knew she could have got it, but she was just like, well, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. Well, I'm not going to like not see you. And same way. And we're like, yeah, if you get COVID, it's not going to be that bad. We'll both have got it. It happens. But yeah, she's been here since that Monday morning they got in at like 4 a.m. and out, and she's good. Healthy so far.
Good. Good to hear. Is that a cup of Joe I see?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You guys make your own coffee, right? I know it's been a while since we talked about this. Are you still doing that? Things kind of change up every time I talk to you about coffee, but I know you're a coffee connoisseur.
Every day I make this cappuccino. I use specially ordered beans that are from a roaster in Brooklyn. Considered the best roaster in the nation, called Say Coffee. And the guy actually works with Megan in sound or something in the studio. But it's a coffee shop in Brooklyn. I usually get those beans, and make it on my espresso, make these little.
Cool. You said you've been doing some training?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm still training every week, as much as I want, which is good, Yeah.
When we talked to Megan, she mentioned that she wouldn't be shocked if you got back in there sooner rather than later. Have you had time to process the last fight and, when you do want to get back, or do you want to just continue to maybe chill for now?
No, originally I wanted to take some time off. And I'm doing that still. I know pretty quickly after the fight, UFC is great. They want to take care of me and make sure I want to fight, and if I want to fight, I could get in there. If not, it's not a big deal. So, they hit me up directly and they're like, hey, we don't know how you're feeling, but we want to make sure you don't want to fight. We're booking fights for the end of the year, I made the decision there that, like, I knew in my mind I didn't want to fight till really the beginning of 2021.
Okay.
But it's sometimes hard when you get offered something just not to be like, oh, might as well. But you know what? I still just, you know, had the restraint and I just wasn't into it, honestly. I didn't have the motivation to take a fight in December or November, which we're in now. I kind of looked at it and I said, well, why would I be fighting? Like, I didn't have a why. I didn't have a reason, you know, like what, to make a check before the end of the year, you know, fine with that. To do this, have fun, to do, you know, like I didn't really just have a why. So I was like, you know what? Well, I'm just going to wait until I really do, you know, till I want to like, I miss it till I'm having fun doing it. And, yeah, so I was actually just talking good timing. I was just talking to my manager probably 2 days ago, and he was asking me, he said, hey, well, now they're booking fights around the time you want to, like February, even March. Like, are you interested then? And I said, yeah, I think that should be a good time.
Joe, so let me ask you something. You've pretty much been a contender for the last decade or so, but you know, like when you know that a title shot is looming or whatever, and you're in that like pole position, was it still fun for you to be a professional mixed martial artist, or did that whole consumption of, you know, people like me and others talking about the belt and this and DJ and whoever back in the day, did that take it away from the fun that you have? Because I've always seen you and categorized you as a fighter that goes out there and he's having a blast and he's living the dream, you know?
No, yeah, and you're right. I mean, I always had fun, you know, and I always told myself I wouldn't really, you know, do it if I wasn't having fun, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. And you know, I'm waiting for that. Oh well, am I still having fun? You know what? I wouldn't have fun in December. You know, maybe wait and start to miss training and enjoy it a little more, miss what I'm doing, you know, and now, you know, get into something, have fun. And as long and when I'm not, you know, I won't be fine anymore. So yeah, no, it didn't take away. I think it was really the opposite. It gave me something, you know, it gave me hope, on top of having fun. 'Cause you know, fighting, you got to kind of like it, I think, to do it. It's something you can't be like, oh, this isn't good. And then you have to go in there because it's so hard, you know, that you kind of have, you almost have to make it fun in regard to. But being up there, like you're talking in like a pole position for a title fight at all times, it also kind of gave me like hope to go along with that fun. Like I always had something, you know, even when I lost, like my last title fight, I knew, oh, I just got to win a few fights, you know, in between. You know, it ended up being like 9 out of 10 fights, which was fine. But like I knew the title was always there and I could get back to it. And now that's really what's different. And what I'm kind of struggling with is like, why? Like that's not there anymore. And that wasn't, you know, the only reason I'm fighting, but that was like the hopeful part of it all for me. And, you know, now I know it's just different because I've been in one position all my life and now I have to be in a whole nother one of a whole nother category. Like, I know there's a good percentage of fighters in the UFC that kind of have to think, hey, I'm probably never going to get a title, but this is my job. And, you know, at least I'm having fun and doing what I love. And it's like, shoot, I never really knew how that felt because I always had something here on the horizon. But then, like, that part kind of dies. And then you're just kind of like, all right, well, now left, I got to adapt to being, you know, this and just doing it for this reason. And, you know, and it's different, you know. So that's honestly why I wasn't 100% motivated at the beginning either.
You know, I was going to ask you something similar to this. For as long as I've ever known you, you're probably the most focused person I've ever met. No matter what it is you're doing, whatever it is at the time, you're focused on that. And if I ask you about something else, you'll answer it because you're a nice guy, but I know you're really focused on that. And even if it's drawing a picture or whatever, I know you're drawing a picture. Don't ask him about fighting because he's drawing a picture, right?
That's so funny because that's so right with anything. And if you lived with me, you would even, like, you know this just by knowing me a little bit. If you live with me, you'd know even more. Megan always, if I'm talking about something, we start talking, I'll just bring that back up or exactly what I'm doing. And she's just like, we were talking about something totally different, but you just wanted it. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
Well, so what I was going to ask you was, later on in life, whatever it is you end up doing past MMA, because you're going to be doing that, I know you're going to love it, and I know you're going to be focused on it. Would you still at any point, though, miss MMA? Did it become that big of a part of your life, or is whatever in front of you what you're focused on the most?
Yeah, that's different. And, you know, that's like a great analysis and question. Well, on me and me as a person, which is funny, because that's so true. But even with going to doing something after, it's like, that's also like a great analysis, because like, I'm going to do something like I love for sure. And like, I've worked so hard during this time to afford myself to do something that I actually like and have fun with, not just like, oh my God, like I fought for a little while and didn't save any money and wasn't successful. Now I got to rush into a job of doing this, you know? So yeah, I don't know. No, I think, I think when I'm done with it, I mean, I can't predict how I'm going to feel, but I think honestly, when I'm done with it, that I won't really miss it, because I know I have to move on to something else and I'll put my full focus in that. And, you know, I don't know. It's good, but like now looking back at it, it was like, it's freaking, you know, I mean, it's obviously always going to be a good memory and who I was and the good times I had in it. But I was like, I won't miss like how hard it was, you know. And I'm not talking like physically, just like how hard it was like on me. So I don't know. It might be kind of nice, honestly. You know, I'll reminisce and stuff. But I don't think I would be like, oh, man, like, I miss feeling this and that, because I don't know. I'm hoping not, but, like, those hard parts, like, those are the ones that are going to, like, maybe it's just me, but, like, maybe those are the ones that are going to, like, stick with me. Like, I don't take time, and I think I never did, to look at, like, a victory or this and that, because it was just kind of supposed to happen. You know, always that's what I trained for and expected, but it's like the hard parts that, you know, stay with you. So I hope, I mean, maybe that's going to be how it is too. Like, I'm going to look back, I'm going to think of like the harder parts, not just like all the great ones. And I don't know. I don't know why I kind of do think like that, but it's just, I mean, maybe it's just nature in me. Like I said, I expected myself to win, you know, the times I did. And even the times I lost. So, and it's kind of like those comments, like, you know, and if you're on social media or something, you don't think about the 100 guys that were like, hey, you're cool. You think about like the one guy that said, hey, you're a piece of junk or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but yeah, I don't know. The hope is I find something that I love so much that, you know, I don't need to reminisce, but you never know. It could have something to do with fighting as well, you know, so it could be right there at the forefront. And I don't think it would be anything as far as like a coaching or anything involved necessarily that way. But maybe a little bit, you know, in the background doing stuff, building the sport around, you know, even trying to do something for the company and making an impact, continuing to make an impact, you know, in MMA in my own way, not necessarily, hey, here's me coaching or doing seminars or the normal thing. But I got actually quite a few ideas I would like to work moving the sport forward if I could work for the company.
Hey, you want to know my prediction?
What's that?
All right. This is what I think is going to happen with you.
Okay.
When you read a book, you don't love chapter 7. And then when you're on chapter 9 going, man, chapter 7 was great, wasn't it? I wish I could reread that. You just kind of focus on the next chapter and then you get excited for the next one. I think you'll kind of look back at the early chapters and you'll always appreciate them. I just think you're going to be engulfed in whatever the next chapter is, right? Yeah. And then overall, just that's what builds the book, right? So yeah. I think you're just going to be engulfed in whatever's next. And I think that's great. But I did want to ask you this. You've been so open with your life and everything you've gone through in your life. Can you give me one thing that surprised you about yourself along this way, on this journey?
Honestly, every day I'm surprised Megan's my wife. I wake up and I'm just like, are you still into this? You know? And like I see her on TV and I see her doing all this cool stuff. And like, especially like the last few months when she has been doing a lot of cool stuff, like during the pandemic and all this stuff, like being a complete stud, that's been kind of like, you know, my hardest times where I'm just like sitting here doing like nothing. And, you know, every time she comes back from something and, you know, she's in her makeup and clothes and coming from TV. And I'm just like, you're not here to like, you know, like you still love me. And like, you know, sure enough. So that's actually pretty surprising. The first thing that comes to mind because it does, but it's funny because it's like a ton of things like that though. If I really had to think about it, like when I sit there and I even just kind of like wake up in my house and like jump on the phone with you guys and I'm making coffee on like a real coffee machine. I don't know. And I sit in my kitchen, like I'm kind of like, how the heck did I get here? You know what I mean? So I don't know. I honestly have times like that all the time. I'll talk to someone on the internet and they're cool. And I'll be like, all right, well, this is weird. Like, I feel like I'm outside of my body, kind of like, you know, looking sometimes. So like, honestly, all that stuff really surprises me. Other than that, like, I don't know. Maybe I can't think too hard right now, but the other stuff that surprises me goes back to like the other stuff that we were talking about. Like, sadly, I don't know what it says about me, but like, it's the bad stuff that surprises me. Like, I'm actually surprised I lost in this way to this guy or something. You know what I mean? Like, that stuff surprises me. When I do something good, I guess I'm still surprised too. Like I said, like, I'm surprised I made it this far and I have this and I have that and all of that kind of stuff. But in a way, it's like a nice like gratitude thing. The other things that didn't happen, like I'm surprised I was never a world champion, like stuff like that. Like, that's surprising, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, the biggest one, I guess, is just my life in general. It's kind of surprising. Like exactly like you said, with everything that I have been through, or you know, whatever, everyone's gone through stuff, you know, I still sit here surprised sometimes that you know, I guess I've done in general what I've done.
I'm going to share a time that I was upset with you, and this was just a couple days ago.
Beautiful.
But this tends to happen with us because you're one of the most difficult interviews for me, not because the way you answer questions or anything like that. I always get so hungry when I see your face because it usually revolves around some kind of food that we're talking about or something.
Yeah.
And the other day I was too lazy to go to the store.
Okay.
So I just made kind of like a simple sandwich. And as I was eating it, you were chowing down on this pizza that looks so amazing. And you know how expensive phones were. I almost threw my phone against the wall.
Really?
So good. Where did you get that pizza? And was it good?
How long ago? A few days ago?
No, I think it was when Megan came back.
So like very recently?
Yeah, very recently.
Oh yeah. That is a nice little, it's kind of like a little secret pizza place. It's called Pizza Anonymous. And I'm glad that's why you're mad and it's not something bad. I take, you know, like, we were talking earlier, like that's one of my passions too, is like just food in general. You know, can you turn that into something that you're so engulfed in? Like, if I want to eat somewhere, I'm going to get it. You know, I'm going to talk about it. I'm like obsessed with it. Anyway, It's a secret pizza place. It's on Flamingo, in a donut shop called Saint Honor. But the pizza place is called Pizza Anonymous, and yeah, it's really good. It's when the donut shop closes, the pizza opens at 5. You know, real nice, like small menu. They have 3 pizzas, like a cheese, pepperoni, vegetable, and then they have a special every month. This month was great. Last month was great. It was like a truffle. This month is like a burrata, prosciutto, honey kind of pizza. But they're really, really good pizza. Pizza Anonymous on Flamingo. You can pick up or delivery. They're good. And my other pizza place that rivals it is a place called Pizzeria Monzu, which I think is actually probably maybe my favorite. Yeah, but Monzu and Anonymous. But yeah, I'm glad I could help you with that after, you know, I pissed you off with it.
Yeah. Let's go back to those ideas. You said you had some possible ideas for the promotion. Is there any you could share with us?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was things. I want to talk to one more thing about the Pizza Anonymous. The sure. Old World pepperoni, those little like crispy, like round discs. So mm-hmm. those are delicious. But their cheese blend is incredible. It's a smoked, it's like a smoked mozzarella and provolone. So the cheese is kind of like smoked. Oh, it's good. I recommend you guys try it. Pizza Anonymous. Yeah.
I'm down.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is stuff I talked about like a while back, even, you know, that I would like to do. Which is like, you know, I mean, I have a lot of things I would like to do. Like, you remember I had Apper Scrappers, and then the pandemic happened, right? So that was cool. But I would even like that to take like, you know, like I was kind of doing that on my own. And I think it would be really cool to like work with the UFC to do it and make, you know, stuff like that a little more the front forefront is like, you know, why aren't some of these pay-per-views, you know, a little bigger of an event? You know, they're like, when I was doing this, I realized, you know, guest fighters show up to the fight and they're just there. Like, no one knows they're there. They go in with tickets, they sit in their stands, they leave. No one says anything. There's no media availability, no anything, no pictures of them, you know, but we could really make it an event, like some kind of red carpet, UFC 2, you know, 260, you know, these guys on there at the same time, make them human, taking a picture of them, make them celebrity because they're on a red carpet, take pictures of them, give media availability, you know, hey, what are you doing at this fight? What are you looking forward to? I got teammates. When's your next thing? All that kind of stuff, you know, bring it in. So I always think about like little things like that is like, how can we make it more, I guess the easiest way to say is like mainstream cultural, but like human. Cause that's my whole thing is like always been to be like more than a fighter. Like we're all fighters, but like everyone, you guys know from interviewing everyone is like, everyone is their own like individual. And that's what the world. I have like a ton of just little things like that, that I'm interested in that I would like to kind of like somehow spread to the forefront. So like a bit of Dapper Scrappers, but like extending that to like making it bigger. But my main thing would be working kind of like as a, like, I guess, liaison between the outfitting and the company. You know, so like be in the middle, because right now it's like a company like Reebok and a company like UFC, and they're making clothes for fighters, but there's no one with, you know, the fighter, the say in between that, you know. So almost kind of like, yeah, like kind of a liaison through that, like help with the outfitting, you know, like, hey, you are making all these clothes and bags and fights and everything for fighters. Well, I need to be, you know this and, you know, think I know a little bit about just, you know, a general like aesthetic for a walkout or an athlete to have for the brand or whatever, and kind of like help him be outfitter. So I think that's something that, like, looking back at like the Reebok deal, like we really could have used a lot, like an eye that or like a, from that. So maybe something like that. And then through that, I could really do that for so many different companies is kind of be for different departments. I think I could be the in-between, you know what I mean? Like this is a fighter with experience that knows what other fighters want, feel, need. And we're kind of working like A to B for, you know, the fighter in between, but with no, you know, talk to them in between. So kind of just maybe like even like an in-between liaison for like all the UFC departments, because I get along with so much of the staff anyway and talk to them every time I see them. You know, they're family because, you know, Megan worked, so, you know, half of them were at our wedding and stuff. So, you know, I could do some stuff like that. You know, and
these are all good ideas, but I want to focus in on the one that you were talking about, because you're right. This should be more of an event. Fight night should be more an event. I think boxing sometimes, especially the bigger events, sometimes outshines UFC when they kind of do a little bit of the roll call for celebrities. I love the red carpet idea. That's something that ONE Championship's done that they do very well. And are you saying like, You're just the idea guy, or would you want to have maybe some sort of a Mario Lopez role on fight night where you're actually involved in that part?
Yeah, I've thought about that as well. I've thought about the same thing. Like, well, if I am doing all this stuff, sometimes it's easier just to do it like bring your idea, you know, out, not rely on someone else to do it. So yeah. I could take it in that route too. I think that could be really good. I have a ton of like little show ideas, and they all revolve around MMA. If you guys know me, like, you know, I love entertainment, and I think I want minor things, but you know, I have a ton of other interests that are pretty general and broad in a sense. You know, between food, movies, music, all that kind of stuff that like, you know, a little, so a ton of ideas that could bring, you know, that I feel like bring fighters those ideas to the forefront as well, like on top of like the fashion and stuff like that. So just little shows and stuff that even I could like small little mini like host or produce. I got a ton of ideas like that. I obviously have my wife as well, so we could work as a team. And you know, just bring just a different side, I think. But yeah, the Dapper Scrappers thing, which being really transforming into just making the event bigger, not necessarily Dapper Scrappers. Like I did Dapper Scrappers because I had to, because no one else was doing it. But like I said, like I'm out there, you know, fishing for guys, you know, trying to find them, you know, they're coming out of the bathroom, I want to take a picture of them. Like, why not? Yeah. Why not give these guys that are going to the event, like, you know, some publicity.
Yep.
They're going there, you know, hey guys, we have, you know, whoever arriving now, if you guys want to talk to them, you can leave from the media or they can go through the media room or something like that. On top of it, you know, selfishly for my own idea that I was doing is like at the same time, we see what they wear, what these guys bring, you know, who they have on their arm, take some pictures of them. All those pictures go out. And therefore, like our sport now looks serious. Oh, those guys on a red carpet. Oh, they're getting interviewed. They're dressed. They must be important because that's what tells you the person's important. You know, like you see someone on a red carpet being interviewed, you're like, oh, well, they're serious. You know what I mean? So just make the events like that a little more serious. So sometimes I go to the events and I'm like, oh my God, there is like that fighter just like sitting in the bleachers over there and like using the bathroom on the main corridor. But no one knows they're here. Why are they here? Like, oh, they're wearing a cool outfit. Like, let's check them out.
Nice. I love it, man. But like you said, you're not done fighting yet. So I suppose we will focus on that.
February or March next year, I think would be the best time for me.
Actually, now that I think about it, you could do both. Really. You could get this idea started. 'Cause I love it, man. I mean, you know, granted the UFC is probably going to lead the way, like they have in many ways in the comeback for sports when we come back from the pandemic and we have events. There's a beautiful limo drop-off area at the T-Mobile that could create that red carpet experience. So I'm already picturing it as you're talking about it. I think you got a home run there. But, Joseph, February or March, you're going to get these questions anyway. But when you come back, I mean, tell us, how do you still feel like you fit within the UFC flyweight division? What are your goals? I don't believe that you wake up any day not thinking that you still won't be a world champion before you retire, but you tell me.
No, that honestly, like, it's a tough thing because I do wake up every day knowing, like, I'm good enough to be a world champion, and I could be, but at the same time, like, that part of me has been kind of like, oh shit, well, that was probably my last title fight ever. And I don't really have the luxury right now to put on a, you know, nine fight I did in between the last fight. So, you know, it's a different thing. Like I was telling you earlier, like that always provided me hope my whole career on top of the fun. But now it's like, I almost just have to, you know, concentrate on the fun and me just loving it. Where before, you know, it was easy. And, you know, if they offered me a fight, I knew it was yes, because this is a step towards that, you know, hope that I have. But, you know, that honestly, to be completely honest, like that's not 100% there anymore, you know, and I can always look at the division and think, oh, well, there's some weird stuff going on right now with a win over Perez and him fighting for the title right now. But
exactly. That's exactly it.
I just don't really think into that as much right now. I realize, like, I thought of the last title fight and I thought, like, hey, that was my last title fight. Now it's time to, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just like that part of me really did like die with it and the hope part was gone, you know, where maybe some other people see it, but maybe, you know, in my mind I just think, you know, like that was my last fight, and we'll see what happens. So, you know, as far as fitting in, like I don't see like a special part in there, you know. I'll always still be like the longest, you know, reigning guy and the person who was in the first UFC title fight and the first flyweight fight in general. But other than that, it's really like it's completely about what I said, is just going out there and having fun and competing. Like that's my place, is just, you know, actually being an athlete and just doing that. Like,
well, you got a ton of skins on your wall. I've told you this from the beginning, going back to WEC and UFC, you have beaten a lot of contenders. You've crushed, you know, a lot of other people that were putting themselves in the position that you were lucky enough to put yourself in. And that all comes around, man. And I'm telling you, you've probably heard this already, but guys like Michael Bisping, he just kept winning. He was in the right spot at the right time. Frankie Edgar, he just kept winning. Alistair Overeem, Dan Henderson, you know, a lot of these fighters that have had the longevity like you have, that have beaten other top-notch guys in highly contested matchups, because of that longevity and always being ready, you can always still be in a position to win a world title. So as long as you still wake up thinking you can be a world champion, you still can, my man. You know, you know, I know this is – oh, hey, Megan.
Like what you were saying, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there you go. You know, just keep waking up with that dream. And, you know – in the meantime, there's nothing you can do at this moment other than enjoy 2020. We got holidays coming up. Then you get yourself up for the next camp. And then you just hover and you keep winning and you hover and you keep winning. Because I'm telling you, follow this sport for a long time. And a lot of people have put themselves in that type of position. Look at the resurgence of Robbie Lawler, man. That guy was with UFC a long time ago. And then he went through Icon. He went through Elite XC, Strikeforce. Then he comes back. Boom. You know what I mean? So
all that helps a ton. And like I said, like, you know, sometimes as an individual, it's hard to be there for you. But like when you hear stuff, it kind of builds, you know, especially in the home every day, you know, from you guys. And like I said, like I'll wake up and I'll go into that whatever fight I may have thinking, hey, I'm the best in the world. You know, I'm just going to show it on this guy, whether he's number four or number three or whatever. You know, I still feel like I'm the best in the world. I'm going to go in with that every day. I'm going to train every day with, you know, that notion and that confidence in my mind. But just like the belt is a thing. I've just, like I said, like I just felt like, damn it, that was my last time when I got to do it. But there is some world's weird stuff happening when it comes to that. You know, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, and that, you know, I just enjoy the life part of it. And now fighting's a part of my life. It's not my total life. So I'm just like, hey, I'll do all this. And when the fight comes, you know, I'll concentrate on that and do it. But yeah. But like I said, that part's always there, waking up and knowing, like, here's another chance for me to prove I'm the best, even if it's not for this, for the belt exactly. But, you know, I'll always go into a fight like that. But, you know, I just don't know if that's there yet. But you never know.
Okay. I want to close with this. This weekend, a legend of the sport is fighting in the octagon for the last time, Anderson Silva. And I wanted to ask you, since you're pretty good at, you know, this type of introspective type of thinking, is there a word that comes to mind when you think of Anderson Silva? And do you have a favorite memory of watching Anderson Silva perform?
Not necessarily a word, because you know what's so brutal about MMA is it's a sport of short memory. You know, you only remember the last things, you know, that someone did. You don't remember, oh, that was their last fight. You don't remember, you know, the 10 before that or something. So with Anderson, you know, I hate to say it, but like, in my own mind, sometimes I think, man, this is another casualty of the sport of somebody, you know, fighting too long, and which you necessarily do see in MMA, because the only way, you know, to know you're not supposed to fight anymore is like, you know, to not be able to fight anymore, to get beat up or whatever. And, you know, you see that all too often in the sport. So unfortunately, I do think of some of those last things first. But when you ask the question, and I can be introspective and look back at him, like, his run was incredible. And I remember when Anderson Silva was fighting, one memory for me is just thinking like that he was literally like possessed and like somehow sold his soul to the devil because he was that good. like it was one of those things where like you see people fight in movies and like people like say like, oh, well, this guy can do this, and if he touches you, like, you'll die. And, you know, like real like martial arts like legends. And that's what I remember looking at him, and like, it's like, wow, like, this guy's not a fighter, like, he's one of those like masters in there like doing whatever he wants. And then I just remember after one of the fights, like, I think it was Forrest Griffin, where he did that and just looked like he was out there. I was like, wow, like, this guy like sold his soul somehow and made a deal, and he's like possessed out there, and it's like witchcraft, you know. And I literally thought that when he was like moving and doing whatever he wanted. So yeah, that's what I remember, just for the first time, like, thinking like, wow, this is like that dude like from Kill Bill or something. You know what I mean? Like those like karate masters that you know, like, or that you hear about in movies that like can just hit you with their thumb and like move out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, this is like an actual one of those, but like fighting with like regular dudes that are just like fighters. And yeah, so I remember him like, yeah, I don't know how he did that, how he made like the deal with the devil, but like, he sold his soul to be like the greatest ever, because that's literally what I thought.
Joseph, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on MMA Junkie Radio. I'm glad you're feeling better from your battle with COVID. You gave COVID the L. So COVID. you're already back in the win column there. Hell, man, you're always in the W column. You're one of the greatest people, yeah, honestly, that we've gotten to know in covering the sport. You're an amazing fighter, and it sounds like 2021 will just that'll be the next time we see you fight. So Yeah. Obviously, enjoy the holidays and enjoy the time there with your wife. She did a great job out there at Fight Island. And then we'll preview that next fight, man, when you're in camp. I'm sure we'll run into you hopefully at the gym and maybe catch you off guard and do our little video series or whatever. You know what I mean?
Anytime. Yep. Always a pleasure seeing you guys, talking to you guys. Appreciate you guys taking the time, reaching out, thinking of an old guy, you know?
I'm 51, man. That's old. You're still a young pup. You're in your mid-30s, so you got a lot of time.
Yeah, it's nice of you guys to think of me.
Take care, my man. We'll talk to you soon.
We'll see you. All right.
There you have it, folks. Joseph Benavidez, one of the best to do it, starting with the WEC, where he had a great run at 135 pounds, only losing to Dominic Cruz, another goat of the sport. And then coming over to the UFC and having an incredible run, an incredible career. For sure, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And I'm glad we were able to catch up with him there. All right, Goes. Joseph has already put me in the mood for a cup of coffee and I think maybe even a pizza later. How about you?
We got an interview coming up.
We do, yeah. So for now, we're going to bid you adieu. Thanks, Junkie Nation, for tuning in. We'll catch you here, of course, on Monday, because Mondays and Thursdays, that's when Junkie Radio goes live at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And thank you all for tuning in to our watch-along this past weekend. It was a great time hanging out with you on a Saturday morning and afternoon. 8 fights we were here for. And if you want to know what a watch-along is, if this is the first time you're viewing, just check out our channel here. Scroll down, and you'll see they're basically fight parties where we get to hang out. Hopefully, we can be doing another one soon. Follow Goes on social media. At The Goes for Twitter and Instagram. I'm at MMA Junkie George for Twitter and Instagram. Our show is at MMA Junkie Radio for Twitter and Instagram. And folks, keep it locked on MMA Junkie because there's lots to talk about with Bellator going tonight, ONE Championship going tomorrow morning, and the UFC on Saturday, plus all the different regional promotions out there that do great work like Titan and LFA and Cage Warriors. I'm telling you, MMA Junkie's the spot. We are out of here, folks. Go out there and be a champion.